Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. This is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy Is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, so I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Though these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy Is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy Is in the Law. And Your Remedy Is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together. Much of that you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I'm similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. Every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator's screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Ever for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. The unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the remedy and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for that disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, I have confirmed that GW will be with us this evening, which is always good news. He had a conflict last week, which is why he missed. And I shared with you our first effort in going on the offensive with regards to the benefits of having corrected your status. And that offense is going to be a judicial notice jurisdiction being challenged. This is a work in progress. So what I'm sharing with you tonight, which is what I shared with you last week, we have new people on the call. We have people that heard it last week. We'll cover that again. There's two points of offense that I'm looking at. One is this judicial notice, a record first thing. In fact, even having this as something that would be filled out in your name, where I say my full name, it would be Michael Edward, or whatever your name is. And then when you're pulled over the side of the road, you hand it to the officer along with other papers that you'll, once you have corrected your status, you know to carry with you as your trial packet. And then the second thing is, of course, and it hasn't been done yet, but it is a work in progress on John's side. John is the speaker for tomorrow night's call. And that is the federal civil lawsuit for deprivation of rights under color of law, possibly even the criminal lawsuit of deprivation of rights under color of law. So let's just go ahead and cover while we wait for GW what we're going to be talking about tonight a little bit. So you've got your court style. For those of you that don't know the phrase court style, that's that legal document that you get on the very first page. In the top center, it's got the court of jurisdiction that is presenting itself along with its county and state and so forth. Underneath that, on the left side, you have plaintiff v. defendant, and on the right side, you have typically your case number, judge possibly, their name, and then underneath that, it would have whatever the topic of that pleading is going to be. Then underneath that, again, centered, very bold and straightforward, is the topic of that paper. So it's basically a repeat of what you have in regular print up underneath on the court style. So it would go like this. Judicial notice, jurisdiction challenged, all uppercase, underscored. Underneath that, in proper justification, it says, comes now, my full name, here and after known as defendant in error, and files this defendant in error judicial notice challenging the jurisdiction of this court in the aforementioned matter. Then the next paragraph is, again, bold, underscored, defendant in error's incontrovertible evidence. Underneath that, it says, see Exhibit A, affidavit in support of defendant and heir's citizenship status. Continuing the next paragraph, again titled background, uppercase, bold, and underscored, and it goes as follows. James Madison gave the American people the first heads up with regards to jurisdiction when he said in the Federalist Paper number 39 in addressing matters of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, quote, its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only and leaves to the several states a residuary and inviolable sovereignty over all other objects, end quote. This was January 26, 1788. This was followed up with Cruikshank, U.S. versus Cruikshank, 92 U.S. 542, nearly 100 years later, 1875, a little over 100 years later, no, just under, a little over 100 years later, when Cruikshank summed up both Houston v. Moore, 18 U.S. 133, which was an 1820 decision, and Moore v. Illinois, 55 U.S. 1820, an 1852 court decision in the interim. Quote, we have in our political system a government of the United States and a government of each of the several states. Each one of these governments is distinct from the others, and each has citizens of its own who owe allegiance and whose rights within its jurisdiction it must, the same person may be at the same time a citizen of the United States and a citizen of a state. But his rights of citizenship under one of these governments will be different from those he has under the other. It continues. When one delves further into Cruikshank, we learn, quote, it is the natural consequence of a citizenship which owes allegiance to two sovereignties and claims protections from both. He owes allegiance to the two departments, so to speak, and within their respective spheres, that's jurisdiction, must pay the penalties which each exacts for disobedience to its laws. In return, it can demand protection from each within its own jurisdiction. End quote. Understand that respective spheres and jurisdiction are synonymous terms. It continues. In 1901, Justice John Marshall Harlan of the Supreme Court of the United States predicted much of what has occurred through this day in all our courts when he said, quote, the idea prevails with some, indeed, and has found expression in arguments at the bar, that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of its restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to. End quote. I'm unable to think of any other single quote more chilling from any jurist that rattled me more than this aforementioned part of Justice John Marshall Harlan's quote. In admonition to other jurists, he continued saying, and I quote, I take leave to say that if the principles thus announced should ever receive the sanction of the majority of this court, a radical and mischievous change in our system of government would result. My own comment is I would say that's already been accomplished. Continuing. We will in that event pass from the era of constitutional liberty, guarded and protected by a written constitution, into an era of legislative absolutism. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside the supreme law of the land finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No other higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violation of the principles of the Constitution, end quote. Downs v. Bidwell, 182 U.S. 244. Is this a reminder to all judiciary for the United States of America? At 215 U.S. Code Title 28, titled Judiciary and Judicial Procedure, Chapter 176, Section 3002, Subsection 15A, B, and C, think Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, quoting Katha versus the United States, 152 U.S., it says, and I quote, the laws of Congress in respect to those matters do not extend into the territorial limits of the states, but have force only in the District of Columbia and other places that are within the exclusive jurisdiction of the national government, end quote. Have judges spoken in the past about this question of jurisdiction? Center next paragraph. Bold, underscore, all uppercase. Once jurisdiction is challenged, the court cannot proceed. When it clearly appears that the court lacks jurisdiction, the court has no authority to reach merits, but rather should dismiss the action. End quote. Malo versus U.S. 505 F. 26. Quote, the law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on the record of the administrative agency and all administrative proceedings. Higgins versus Levine, 415 U.S. 533. Quote, a judgment rendered by a court without personal jurisdiction over the defendant is void. It's a nullity. A judgment shown to be void for lack of personal service on the defendant is a nullity. Schrammick versus Schrammick, 17 Kansas App, 2nd, 576-77. Quote, the burden shifts to the court to prove jurisdiction. Resman versus Lambert, 469 F. 2nd, 416. Quote, court must prove on the record all jurisdiction facts related to the jurisdiction asserted. End quote. Lantana versus Hopper, 102 F. 2nd, 188. Also Chicago v. New York, 37 F. Sup. 150. Quote, once challenged, jurisdiction cannot be assumed. It must be proved to exist. End quote. Stuck versus Medical Examiners, 94, CA 2nd, 751, 211, P 2nd, 389. Quote, jurisdiction once challenged cannot be assumed and must be decided. End quote. Maine versus Thibodeau, 100 South C, Court, 250. And most importantly, Rescue Army versus Municipal Court of Los Angeles, 171 P. 2nd, 8, 331, U.S. 549, 91 L. Ed., 1666. Quote, a court has no jurisdiction to determine its own jurisdiction. For a basic issue in any case, before a tribunal, it is power to act, and a court must have the authority to decide that question in the first place. End quote. Well, then, what are the remedies for the American people who are entrapped in this legal quagmire? Would it please this honorable court to be made aware of something that could have negative repercussion of a substantial nature upon either the court or the bench? Again, new paragraph, all uppercase, bold, and underscored, case precedent remedies. Shurer versus Rhodes, 416 U.S. 232. It's a 1974 decision. U.S. Supreme Court, quote, U.S. Supreme Court held that the state officials acting by color of law may be held personally liable for the injuries or torts they cause, and that official or sovereign immunity may not be exerted. Warnock versus Pecos County, Texas, 116 F. 3rd, 776. Quote, when a state officer acting under a state law in a manner violative of the federal constitution, he comes into conflict with the superior authority of that constitution, and he is in that case stripped of his official or representative character and is subjected in his person to the consequences of his individual conduct. The state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. End quote. I believe this all boils down to this when one understands who truly holds the political power in our nation. Frankenhauser versus Rizzo, 59 FRD. This is a 1973 decision. Quote, it is the manner of enforcement which gives Title 42, 1983 its unique importance. For enforcement is placed in the hands of the people. Each citizen acts as a private attorney general who takes on the mantle of the sovereign, guarding for all of us the individual liberties enunciated in the Constitution, end quote. Next subject, bold, capital, underscored, prayer. Therefore, justice demands that parties in this cause asserting jurisdiction, having been established upon challenge, prove up their claim in a separate hearing evidenced by the authenticated evidence with testimony from a competent fact witness one having firsthand knowledge to this challenged jurisdiction. Let it be known by all. This defendant in error vehemently objects that any ignorance of this claim remain unchallenged. Defendant in error objects to any further proceedings until the prosecutor produces evidence contrary to this defendant in error's jurisdictional claims. Furthermore, defendant in error demands the prosecutor's claims be dismissed and the defendant in error be awarded costs of suit and court costs. Respectfully submitted, blah, 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 blah. And then finally, the certificate of service where you have notified all parties properly. So I see that GW has been here now for about 5 minutes. He heard a portion of what I'm saying. GW, I opened this call by sharing that we're developing two offensive tools. One is something that I put together that you heard partially of right now, and it's a notice to the court for jurisdictional challenge. I suggested that once the team has approved, modified, done whatever to this, trashed it and started over with something else, I don't care. But once we have an approved document, that it be part of your package where you have your W-8 Ben, et cetera, so that the law enforcement officer, at least in speeding instances and, of course, in any other application, but when an officer pulls you over, you pull out your travel packet and you make sure that he has that, and you apprised him of its contents and encouraged him to read it before he proceeds, and at the very least to contact his loss prevention officer and read it to him over the telephone, microphone, whatever, so that they understand they're initiating before it even gets past the side of the road. And then, of course, the other part is what John has been working on quietly is the full lawsuit, Title 42, 1983, and as well as the criminal lawsuit, Title 18, Section 242, both being deprivation of rights under color of law. So with that having been said, let me turn the call over to you, GW. Tell us what's going on this week, perhaps what you think of what you heard and where we're going, and maybe field some phone some questions from the board here. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. You know, that sounds good. Let's I'd like to, yeah, that sounds good to look at that situation you have with having an actual packet, you know, to have real handy in your car as you meet up with some of these wheels and be able to present it in a way that would be most, you know, acceptable and honorable, respectable, so that they can be given the opportunity to not proceed with something that might really affect the court or the job or anything else. So that always sounds good. I wanted to talk a little bit about the scenario that I went through. Oh, this was a few weeks ago that I called this. I actually am led to talk about this in kind of a way that gives it kind of a header, okay? And it was, I was actually at a mission, not conference, but it was a mission dinner to raise money for an awareness for one of my good friends who's got a very creative way of bringing the good news of the gospel to people that go to these festivals, new moon festivals, things like this. He's really kind of a hippie looking kind of guy, but he really, really has a heart for people that are really lost, the kind of people that you might have saw in the movie that was about Chuck Smith recently, and about, you know, reaching these people that are really they're looking for God, kind of in all the wrong places, but they're still looking for God, and they're doing it through meditation and drugs and everything else. Anyway, I was sitting there at the table, and it was a round table where there was a bunch of gentlemen my age, a little older, and we got into, of course, speaking about different things, and they asked me what I did, and it just the conversation just grew and grew and grew. And before I go into the conversation, I want to say that the topic that I wanted to bring up on this, that I'm kind of writing a little expose on, is called situational awareness. Okay? And situational awareness is taught by our military, especially the special ops, Green Berets, SEALs, that are out in the field and are, have to have, you know, the very foundation of situational awareness is knowing who you are and who you're not and where you are and where you're not. And there's a whole lot more to the talk about, you know, their training and the kind of tactics and principles and training that they go through to be in that kind of a situation where they can identify and you know, understand a room or place that they are or whatever. But I'm just going to talk about the two. And the reason I am is because it came up twice, actually, once at this meeting. I was talking to the gentleman straight across from me, and they were, one was a doctor and another businessman sitting to his right, and the doctor was asking me a lot of questions, and he was very interested in what I did, and then the gentleman asked me for my card. Of course, all these conversations always usually end up, you know, like everything else does, talking about Title 26 and tax code. So I started telling them the benefits of having correct your status and things you're able to do and to be much, much more likely to prevail, okay, in not skirting but avoiding, okay, a lot of unnecessary interaction and also donations paid to different organizations that don't use your money wisely. So we got into that subject, and the gentleman sitting right to my right, he very, I could tell nervously, but, you know, kind of with a little bit of gusto, you know, he said, well, he said, he quoted out of, I believe it's out of Matthew, where, and I forget the exact verse, but anyway, everybody will get it when I say it. It was where the disciples asked Jesus if they should pay taxes, and he asked for the coin. He said, "Who image is on the coin?" And one of the people there said, "Well, that's Caesar." And then he said, "Well, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and unto God what is God's." And this gentleman used that to try to, it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction to try to, I guess, quell the talk that was happening at the table with this possible newfound freedom that these people were going to, you know, experience if they understood, you know, how to correct their status. And, of course, instantly, I was engaged with him, and this is where I get into situational awareness, okay? Because I said to the gentleman, absolutely, Jesus said that, and he was absolutely correct in what he said. But I said, you have to understand something about that. In Jesus's day, they had a dictator, his name was Caesar, and they were literally his property, okay, in that situation. But I said, here in America, we have a representative republic, and we, I pointed at myself and the people around the table, I said, we are the government here. We have no dictator. And of course, he was a little bit shaken by what I'm saying. Probably the first time that somebody's ever responded to him in such a forceful way. But it's really true. You really to know where you are and where you're not. That scripture absolutely is true and correct. And it's especially correct in Jesus' day at that time when they did have a dictator. But thank God, we don't have a dictator here. We have people that act like dictators, but we're not supposed to have dictators. We're supposed to have representatives that represent us, and we're supposed to be the government that is giving them permission to represent us. And so it was another kind of interesting thing that he came along and said. I was talking about how I love bringing the scripture into all this, and I was talking about how God in Hosea was talking about his people. He says, my people are perishing for lack of knowledge. Okay? This guy just quickly back, well, that's only about knowledge of God. He said, well, sir, that knowledge of God runs a lot deeper than just studying your Bible. That's why he didn't say Bible learning or the understanding only of me. He said knowledge. And, of course, I went on to tell him what knowledge was. Didn't like that very much. But, this whole thing, another client of mine reached out. I guess some lady had said the same thing to him recently. And, of course, I put that back to him on Signal. And he said, wow, I knew you would have the right answer. So, there's – we really have to know – and this is part of this whole training that Michael's really good at and John is really good at and that we do over here is that, when John or when Michael is talking about challenging jurisdiction, jurisdiction is all about situational awareness. You have to be aware of, first off, who you are and who you're not. And exactly where you are, where you're not. Okay? And so, it helps out knowing all those things and learning how to coalesce and understand, jurisdictions. One other thing I can bring up is, this was a couple weeks ago, I guess, at this point. I was with, two people that wanted to take me out to dinner and pick my brain a little bit because they're big-time students and had been to many of the conferences all over the country of David Strait. And I definitely wanted that opportunity. So we got together and had a few hours at dinner, and which was really, really good for them to be able to pick my brain and be able to pick their brain. And it just every time I meet with some of these people, this man is a doctor. He's in his 70s, and he's very woken up. Okay, been studying a lot of this material for a long time. He's an anesthesiologist, and he's still working. But he's done a number of things to set himself apart, which is really good. He's married to a woman that just retired from as a licensed pilot for one of the big airlines. She's qualified to fly many, many types of jumbo jets, and very, very savvy, very smart woman. Okay, well educated, and boy, they're really on this information, and they wanted to know so much more. And so, they had actually been part of the process of trying to help David Strait collate and organize some of his materials. But, they confirmed to me that what I presented to them was completely different from what they went through with their process. And they're really totally wondering if they, really, really got things corrected with, what they ended up with. And also, not very much understanding about the W8BEN and that process. They don't, there's a whole host of different things that are really left out, and they really did confirm to me that this David Strait character most likely is not somebody to be trusted, and especially his wife. And they had a lot of interaction with him and his wife over the years. So I just want to put that out there. We've been talking about it from time to time and kind of exploiting his process from time to time, but it's only because of the people that and the fallout that we see from some of these other so-called gurus out there that are trying to help people to navigate the, you know, this system that we're in and correct their so-called correct their status. And so it was a great confirmation for me again. Not that I need to do that anymore, but it was just it was nice to be able to help some other people that were similarly situated to trying to seek truth. So anyway, with that said, I think probably a good time to Michael or Martin, if you're there, to open up the call for people that have questions. And when I ask questions, we'll be glad to do it if we can answer them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. There were several new people that have joined us since we had our disclaimer at the beginning of the call. So for their benefit, I'm going to just quickly say that nothing that you hear in this call in any way, shape, or form may be deemed by you to be legal advice or financial advice. If you're on this call seeking legal advice or financial advice, I politely, but no less firmly, ask you to hang up on the call and then contact someone in your state who has been licensed by that state to give legal advice or financial advice. All that you'll hear in this call is what someone might do where they're similarly situated and who has studied the law to the extent, as Jefferson said, are, quote, knowledgeable in the law and well-disposed to using it, end quote. So with that having been said, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand, and then I will unmute your line so that you may make comment or question. And for those of you on Freedoms Radio, simply look to the center right of your monitor. You should see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side, and this rectangle is empty. Type away. Click on the inside, type away your comment or your question. Outside, underneath, you should see a place to put your name, some other relevant information, then hit submit. When you hit submit, it'll pop up on my end, and I will then be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question for GW to answer. So we'll start with Jennifer, go to Brent, go to Judith, and then go to Ed. So, Jennifer, what you got on your mind?
There's two questions, but one's about the – I've forgotten if GW could sort of say how to use the W8 Ben, but before that, I just wanted to say I found online where in New York State you can order number plates. What do you call number plates? For the car.
Vanity plates?
Yeah, I guess vanity plates. And, you know, for basically anything, and some of them are non, you don't have to pay the registration fee every year and everything. And so I was just wondering whether I should have someone of your team, like, help with writing a letter to order one that would be for American nationals, and it doesn't have to say American national, but whatever they want it to say, that the police would know it meant American national, and we don't have to pay for the registration and all that sort of stuff.
Well, it's whether you pay for the registration or not is a moot point. It's the fact that it's registered. That's why I'm making the trip to Tallahassee after the event that you're familiar with, many people on this call are familiar with, to sit down with the Secretary of State of Florida and the Department of Motor Vehicles, Department of Transportation, to sit down and basically share with them the judicial notice, share with them examples of the criminal and the civil deprivation of rights under color of law, federal lawsuits, and say, look, we want to be at peace with you. We don't want to be at war with you. And the end result is it's going to cost you a tremendous amount of money to defend this with each and every one of us, with me particularly. And there's just no sense for it if you just produce for me a gift in the form of a license plate, a tag, or whatever you want to call it, that I can put on, I could put there where the license plate would go, so that when a law enforcement officer runs the plate, it says the same thing that it says when they run my passport, my U.S. passport. Do not detain, do not investigate, release immediately, lifetime concealed carry permit. And they know not to, to bother you doing 85 and a 70 after they've run the plate. So that's where I would say it is. I'd be interested in that link, Jennifer. I'll look into it.
Right. Well, I mean, I was charged because I had parked my car in Queens and my registration, which I had paid for, was sitting on the dashboard and not on the window. And so I wanted to try and do something about it now, not wait till after the event.
Right. But when you filled out that registration form, two things happened. First is you literally gave your property as a gift to the state of New York. And mm-hmm. So as it being their property, they can behave in it. And then, of course, the second thing is that that registration determines that they own it and what your conduct is. And part of your conduct is that you'll go by the speed limits and so forth. That has nothing to do with your status as corrected to being an American national, because they can't associate that with you, but they could certainly, and it's not done because I challenged it, but I can see since it's their property and you're misbehaving in their property that you paid for in full and gifted it to them, that they could take it away from you. They could impound it.
But I only did it under threat of jail and not because I wanted to. So surely that accounts for something.
When you registered the card,
yeah,
you had somebody that you had a law enforcement officer threaten to take you to jail.
Well, I would have if I was probably sitting in the car because I mean I didn't have it on the window. If I didn't have one at all,
it's something to be litigated for sure.
If I didn't have one at all, it would have been worse than the fact that you know.
I know. This is a work in progress. This is a wonderful gift that GW has brought us. You know, he had 14 years. It has 14 years now, more than that, because time's passed and the year's gone by since we started. Where not one of his students have ever gone, you know, had to end up having a fine or whatever through traffic court. They never lost. So
right. Okay. Well, anyway, maybe he could just remind me how to use the W8 Ben, please.
There you go, from GW.
Okay, dokie. So you've got to fill out, you've got the WD and filled out properly. I just don't remember. Okay.
Yeah.
And the affidavit is attached to it. So, you know, it depends on what you want to accomplish, okay, because there's several different roads you can go down with it, okay? I don't know if you want to send it into the Treasury, okay, and try to get the response back, you know, to get it put into your master file. I don't know if you want to use it with an employer. I don't know if you have a situation, you know, there's just many different scenarios that you can use it for. I would rather you be kind of specific with me. What is it you want to use it for?
Okay, well, what does it mean? I mean, what is it saying? If I sent it into the Department of Treasury, what is it telling them?
It's telling them that you're certified as a non-resident alien in regards to income tax withholding in the United States.
And so that has to do with tickets for speeding or whatever.
No.
Anything to do with that, or not?
Well, okay. In a roundabout way, yes. It would be one of the documents that you would want to have in this, I believe Michael was just talking about, the travel package that you would have,
right,
and to be able to pull out. Okay, because an American national is in the same category as a non-resident alien.
Okay.
That's why we use the W-8-B-E-N, you know, properly filled out and with the affidavit attached to it. So that's the reason we use it, because, for one thing, when you go to the jurisdictional statement of the IRS code in Title 26, the very first the very first thing they say is that an income tax is imposed on every United States citizen, and there's a comma, and then it says, and to the extent of two code sections, and then it says a non-resident individual, non-resident alien individual. So they captured both jurisdictions. We're constantly talking about, and Michael's constantly talking about challenging jurisdiction, okay? Got to be established, okay? So they get in both jurisdictions in the very beginning of the code in the first couple sentences. They get in the United States citizen that the income tax is imposed on, and then they say, well, and then to the extent of this section and this section, a non-resident alien individual. So they capture both, there's two different jurisdictions right there. They capture both of them, okay? And not one person in a million usually is any wiser about what they just did, okay? They're thinking that's the Mexican guy that, trims my bushes and does my lawn. You know, he's come over across the border and he's come here for a certain period of time and he's the non-resident alien guy. Well, yeah, he is, but if you're an American national, you're also in that category. And so using the W-8-B-E-N, it just depends on what you want to use it for, okay? If you want to use it, you know, during the traffic stop, you could do that, you know, put that in the package. I would definitely, you know, if I was similarly situated, I would do that. I love using that with anybody that would want to look at it, because it's pretty strong stuff.
So, well, I know New York State Treasury Department, where you send your New York State taxes, says non-resident. Well, there's a lot of names they use, a lot, non-resident aliens or citizens. I know if it's a citizen that's not us or whatever. But they say everyone basically has to pay tax if the business, for a non-resident, if the business had something to do with New York State. So does that mean possibly that even as a American national, you'd have to pay state tax?
Well, okay. So, is that what you would want to use it for?
Actually. Yep.
Okay. All right. So, Yeah, for and what you're talking about, is it business tax or personal tax?
No, personal.
Okay. All right. Well, if you're probably wanting to use it for that, what I would do is if I was similarly situated, is I would and I was going to do that, I would modify the cover letter, basically, that you would want to send with that in to the taxing authority, and modify it for the New York State. I believe they say State of New York, right?
New York State with a capital S.
Okay, so the New York State with a capital S, yeah. So I would be, I would be modifying the, we do have a cover letter that you can use, okay, to send in with the WABN that goes to a certain office of the IRS, but you can take that same document, okay, and modify it and to the office, of course, of the
New York State Treasury.
Yeah, the New York State Treasury, because that document itself, what it says is this is legal and lawful notice, okay, not to be construed as a filing. All right.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So not to be construed as a filing. There's other wording on it that said, you know, please place this in my, you know, permanent, I forget the actual wording right now because I'm not looking at it. But the big thing in this is it says it's not to be construed as a filing. Okay. And that it's legal and lawful notice. Okay.
Oh,
to that department.
Yes.
That's, and by the way, that's what we do with the WABN if anybody ever wants to send it in, like I did. Okay. Way back in 2008, I sent mine in, but it had to go along with a cover letter, because if you just send it in, or if you send it in and just say, please, you know, file this, they will, but they'll do it. They file it as a filing, okay, like a 1040. And then they immediately, it used to be many, many years ago, they gave you a $500 frivolous filing fee. Now they give you a $5,000 frivolous filing fee. Yeah, that's why you need the letter, you know, you need the cover letter to state that this is not to be construed as a filing. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, maybe Michael could send me a copy of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Do you have that, Michael, or do you need me to send that to you?
I need you to send that to me, please.
All righty, I will.
Well, that's all for me. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jennifer.
All right, thank you, Jennifer. Next is Brent. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good evening, folks. Yeah, a couple things to talk about tonight. I had an interesting experience last week after we spoke. One of the crew members on my flight to Tel Aviv was an American national, and it's the first person. Yeah, I was the first person in that capacity, in that position, first colleague I've ever met that was like that. And
how did the conversation get started? How did the conversation get started? You got to know.
Well, he was talking. He's relatively new, and was talking about stuff. And I said, "Yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah, I know. I know. I'm one of those people too." And he couldn't believe it. He just couldn't believe it. He's like, "I've never met anybody that's gone through this process." He says, "When did you do it?" And so we got talking about it. And he just went through it. I don't know, a couple months ago. But he's very articulate. Seems to really know what he's talking about. He did not mention David Strait. And I asked him to, unfortunately, it was a four-member crew, and I was not paired with him. We had we had one 5-hour break on our trip, and so I was pilot flying with another pilot while he was on break, and vice versa. So we didn't get to talk about it while we're working, but we did go out to dinner, and actually it was the first time that the entire crew, all 13 of us, went out to dinner. So I didn't really get a chance to talk to him personally about this stuff, but there was some conversation about it, and I'm obviously going to follow up with him and have a good conversation with him about this stuff. So I don't know exactly where he got his information or how he went through the process, but he seems to really know what he's talking about. And he sent me a link of, I said, well, send me some information about where you found out about this stuff. And he says, okay, I'll send you something. So he sent me this link, and it was really crass, really just really coarse. And it's a contract killer course. It's it's apparently a free thing online, and the website is onestupidfuck.com.
Yes.
And,
yeah, I know which one you're talking about. I can't even get on that site. Like, what the heck? Yeah.
So, do you know anything about that guy? I guess that's my first question.
He's been brought to the forefront a few times by people that are studying this, and I think if you can get around all this stupidity, okay, just the crassness and all the language and everything else, you can get the golden nuggets, okay, and people have promoted that site to me, a number of times, and I've been there like once, and I was like, oh, this is crazy, yeah. But I could see the crowd that it would register with, And so
okay.
I hopefully they're doing a good thing.
Yeah, well, my colleague, he seemed to know all about the affidavit and, sent it off apparently correctly. And he's working on doing one of the other steps that he's working on is the revocation of election, the ROE.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And is that something that you would, if you were similarly situated, be sending to the IRS?
Sure. Every little bit helps. You just, you're talking about a revocation of election on your first, revocation of your first election, basically, is what it is. It's going back and rescinding your signature off of your very first election, which is the very first 1040 you've ever filled out.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And so, yeah. I mean, it's all worth doing. It's all worth doing.
I would just interject that before you do that you have a conversation with John.
Okay. There's also a site called exittaxclub.com, and they say that there's an established legal process that allows you to go through and revoke your election. And,
yeah, more people are tuning into it. I think there's going to be a lot of different information on that coming out, because a lot of people have done that. A lot of people have charged a lot of money for that, and people are putting it out now. And so, I know, what Michael says, I want to have a conversation with John about it, whatever, and for whatever reasons,
Yeah. yeah, we started that process, and I'm not sure where we are with that. We actually had a call, and then I need to get back in touch with you, Michael, on the details of that. I think the ball's been bounced back and forth a couple times. I know. you were going back and forth with John about the cost of such a thing. And he threw that in your court. You threw it in his court.
Why don't you get back with me tomorrow and we'll talk about it. See if we can't move the ball forward.
All right. So so that's part of the process is getting to the point where the employer stops illegally withholding funds. And there's also a lawsuit that's in the works against the employer. And obviously the W8BEN is involved and been submitted. And, you know, there's a lot of the pieces that were discussed with his colleague about all of this stuff. And I've been trying to, you know, not trying diligently, but I've been working towards getting this whole thing resolved with the employer for a year and certainly diligently for the last 6 months. And they're not budging. And I think the reason is that they keep farming it out to a third party. I think that third party for resolution, and that third party, I think, is the IRS. And the IRS doesn't really have what they need, even though I'm submitting the affidavit and the W8BEN. I think there's another piece involved, and that's why I was asking about this revocation of election and going directly to the IRS and getting that to the right. Apparently, it's important, like you said, GW, with the cover letter and stating the proper things in there. I have the verbiage for that. Yes, I'd like to get a letter, you know, get that in writing as well, Michael, if you're working on that.
You know, I wonder if it would be a separate venture or issue, but I wonder if a lawsuit against the IRS for tortuous interference with a contract would be something that John would be interested in against the IRS. I was just, I'm just musing, thinking.
Well, there's again, from my perspective, I think there's a legal process that you can go through to basically correct your status with the IRS as well. And apparently people are doing it.
You've already corrected your status. So the fact that they choose not to recognize it puts them in a position of injuring you.
Why don't you drop?
Huh?
I'm listening to this.
Yes, but you have to tell them that your status has been corrected. That's the piece that I'm working on right now that I'd like assistance with.
Okay. Give me a call tomorrow to see if I can't get John talk to you for 10 minutes, 20, whatever it takes.
Okay. And then the other piece has to do with the, you know, exactly what Jennifer was talking about with the license plate, and was going to tomorrow actually go down and put the vehicles in the trust. And GW talked about when you do that, when you go down to the Department of Motor Vehicles and you sign all the paperwork and stuff, you're giving them, you know, authority basically to have ownership of your vehicle and all the rest of that.
That's true. And the other option is that you have the automobile. I think, GW, you've talked about this before, where you go through a salvage process.
We had somebody on the line talking about that call. Okay.
Yeah.
Doing a salvage title and the nuances with that, you know, how it's a technicality within.
That's about it several times over the year.
Yeah. So I'm not familiar with that process because I'm just it's just not something that I'm that excited
sure.
for myself to do. Okay.
Sure.
Brent, I know
can you be on tomorrow night's call?
Yeah.
Brent,
well, I think so.
Yeah, bring that up on tomorrow night's call about the salvage process. And ladies and gentlemen on the call tonight, if you want to learn how to take ownership of what you paid for back from the state, you should be on tomorrow night's call as well. Any other questions, Brent?
No, I think that's it. Just wanted to bring up the that point about finding somebody that's going through the same process, that's fighting the same employer. And
yeah, and
yeah.
encourage him to be on, to come on our calls. Give him my phone number. Tell him I'd love to talk to him. I've got questions.
Okay. Will do.
Most excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Yeah, that's great,
next
Brent.
Is, yeah, it is. It's awesome. Next is Judith. Go ahead, Judith. Judith in Virginia?
I'm here.
Hi. You had your hand raised?
I did. This is all new to me. And so I'm curious about this change of status. Why do we have a change of status and what are the benefits and stuff? Is there documentation that a website I can go
sure.
to?
Sure. The very first thing that you want to do, Judith, is go to a website. Do you have something to write with?
Yes, I do.
www.oncewewerecaught.com.
I'm sorry. You broke up. Could you repeat that?
Once. Once, O-N-C-E, once, twice, thrice, it's once. Once we were colonists.
Once we were colonists?
C-O-L-O-N-I-S-T-S. You know, somebody that lives in a colony is a colonist.
Yes.
Once we were colonists.
Okay.
That's what we were when England sent over the
right.
pilgrims in 1620 and Virginia in, what, 1590 or something like that, 1509, I don't know, whatever it was. So read that, and you have my direct number, don't you, Judith?
Yes, I do.
So read that, and then call me, and then we can talk. Okay?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much. And everyone on the call, if you haven't been and read, if you haven't read Once We Were Colonists, a primer on jurisdiction, you really, really need to. And the website that we made easy for you is just www.oncewewerecolonists.com. Anything else, Judith?
No, that's it. I'm just really curious about.
All right. Thank you so very, very much. Next is Ed. Go ahead, Ed.
Okay. I'm curious, maybe a couple things here. Curious about in your talk at the beginning, go through I'm familiar with most of the same cases, but I've always been curious about the fact that owe your allegiance to two jurisdictions, your obedience to two jurisdictions, and that might be the better way to say it. And
right.
court cases don't ever seem to mention your actual rights, setting up a personal jurisdiction that they can't cross. And now that we're American nationals, what does the state jurisdiction have against us, and what does the federal jurisdiction have? My own opinion is that the only way they ever get anything is if we traipse across the rights of someone else or what they proprietarily own, what the state and federal jurisdictions own. Is that a good assumption to make?
GW, you want to take that?
I'm sorry. Oh, there we go. Unmute. Doing some stuff in the kitchen. Yeah, okay. So you're... Okay. So in the beginning, okay, of our country, when you were categorized as somebody that did have constitutional rights, that's when the trigger happened, is when you did, okay, violate somebody else's right. Okay, you stole from them. You killed them. You injured them, and there was a body. That's the reason for, of course, the terminology we get, you know, habeas corpus, bring forth the injured party, bring forth the injured body, okay, rid of habeas corpus. But, you know, after the 14th Amendment to the Constitution and then the Act of 1871 and the creation of the corporation and the U.S. corporation, and then you have all these, statutes coming in where now the federal government is claiming injury because you sped down the road. and you know, 10,000 other things, okay, where there's no injured party, really. That's when everything, you know, really changed. And how could they get away with that? Well, they got away with it because, you know, they created another class of citizens called U.S. citizens, which were their property, their franchise, just like a McDonald's has franchises. You know, you had the corporate McDonald's, and then you had all the franchises. And they can pretty much dictate to their franchisees pretty much what they want. And that kind of situation is what happened in our country. And so that's the reason, of course, that we do what we do with correcting somebody's status, with getting your status corrected and getting it on the record that way and being able to understand the differences. I was speaking with a gentleman that I'm taking through the process here who runs one of the assemblies over in Reno. That's a patriotic kind of thing where, and they've been doing a bunch of different things. And he's also, by the way, kind of a whistleblower, all right? And so he's been, you know, up against and in the battle with the cops and getting thrown out of places and serving them with papers and everything else. And we were talking, and he was asking me about different kinds of scenarios. And he's got a large group, thousands. And they're trying hard. They're just missing some information. And one of the things that I was telling him was that I'd love to see, and I haven't heard of anybody doing it besides me, okay, so far, is that when you're doing some of these things where you're going to be confronted by government authorities, and usually it's an officer, okay, usually at that level, where once you have all your corrected paperwork and everything's done, now you can tell, you know, the cop that's trying to approach you, it's like, sir, I would really be interested in knowing, you know, how the court would charge me as an American national with my corrected status. How is that going to look? You know, I really want your opinion, sir. Yeah, I mean, really, really put it in their face. Because it would be interesting to get them to understand that they're not just messing with a U.S. citizen, a U.S. person, a U.S. individual. They're now messing with an American national that knows how to, who's well-disposed to communicate that jurisdiction to whoever's approaching them. And it's like, you sure you want to do this? I mean, you know, and this guy really liked that. It's like, yeah, that would be a different day. You know, that would probably change things a little. I don't know if I answered your question.
I don't know either.
I'll take a bite at it.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, Ed, I'm sorry. I overtalked you. Please.
I'm left with still wondering, are there state regulations that apply to us when I'm an American national? Are there federal regulations that will apply to us when I'm an American national? Again,
okay, so here's
vested in my rights.
Okay. I want to go back to something here.
Okay.
You're talking about that. I want you to go back to it might not answer it directly, but it's going to be something that you really want to keep in mind, okay?
All right.
One of the Supreme Court cases says, okay, that the acceptance of a license in whatever form does not obligate the licensee to any code, statute, regulation that is prescribed that is repugnant to the Constitution. Okay? So in this matter that we're talking about here, kind of relating it to it, it's okay. So, all right, what part of the state statutes, okay, can apply to you as an American national be something that they could enforce on you? Now, here's what the thing is: are you doing something that is violative to somebody else's rights? You know, are you injuring somebody? Because if you're not, you're really in the clear. I don't care what state you're in.
Right. Yeah, I've heard this. I don't know the people involved in the case right now off the top of my head, but I'm familiar with the case you're speaking of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's why I don't even get that concerned about all the individual states, because if they're in alignment with the Constitution, then anything and everything that they're going to put into their codes or statutes has got to align with it.
Yeah. Their codes and statutes have to line up with the Bill of Rights, basically. Other parts of the Constitution,
yep,
too. But as to how they affect us, the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, that's right.
Michael had something to say.
Yeah, what I wanted to cover with you was to get to the basics, back to ground zero. What is ground zero? What is the land that you're standing on? Who does it belong to? And your flesh and blood, who does it belong to? The land is either land of the United States or it's land of one of the Union states. They confuse you by utilizing the Social Security Acts in the 1930s, the Buck Act of 1940, and taking, per case, Pennsylvania, the Union state,
and then talking about something called the state of Pennsylvania, which is a territory of the United States. The zip code, the very first number in a zip code, determines what federal zone you're in one of its territories. So when you talk about the state statutes and anything along those lines, that all of it belongs strictly to the United States under their Buck Act, under the territory known as the state of Pennsylvania. Your laws you are obliged to obey are found in your state constitution and the sessions of your state.
And the one
nowhere
of my
else. Session and laws.
S-E-S-S-I-O-N.
Session.
I don't know, but I looked up Pennsylvania session laws, and they go clear back to 1609.
Correct. And anything from 1609 forward that the Union State Pennsylvania crafted, if you would, which would be in complete agreement and compliance with your state constitution and federal constitution, is what you're bound to obey. The statutes is something else. So any document you receive from the state of Pennsylvania talking about their statutes is all United States stuff. And it's the challenges that have to be met when you were you here 78 minutes ago? Yeah, you were here when the call started. So
yep.
You heard me go over the judicial notice, correct?
I came in after you started that, but it's something that was appealing to me.
Right.
I'm going to want to have a call.
Just email me for a copy of tonight's call.
Okay.
And I'll send it to you, or I can send you last week's call. It's the same call. And I'll send you a copy of it for you to listen to. But the bottom line is, it's basically saying this is notice that you will have the state identify the land, and you will have the state identify this man, in this case, being either property in the franchise of the United States under the second definition of United States, have my constitutional rights and no civil rights. See, you don't have civil rights. I don't have civil rights. Civil rights
are for
slaves.
I don't have any property rights. Because of
property. You do. You just haven't figured out how to enforce that. Everyone has property rights.
I understand
and
that.
And that's the work that we're doing. John would spend more time on this if he could. He's got one student that is in federal prison right now. He's got three students that are basically, if he's not successful in doing what he's going to do, they're all going to be on the street. Two of the three are in their 80s. One of them is a younger man with a wife and children that they don't need to have their home disrupted. So there's. When we look at something, when John looks at something, the team looks at something, everything is predicated upon, you know, how close to this water boiling over are we? Well,
yeah.
Is the water boiling over? Well, what do we got to do right now is to turn it off. So that's what we're dealing with.
I've now experienced watching Norfolk Railroad change the lives of everyone around me, people that can't live in their homes and having their lives just entirely disrupted. They go into their houses and they can't breathe, or they go in and they get an instant headache. This is 5 months later, so I'm real familiar. People need remedy, and they need it quickly, just as quick as it can be offered. We can't live like this. So go ask.
It's better than to find
John handle
half a dozen others. Yeah, all of that's doable. Every bit of it's doable. It's time and money. It's personnel. It's having people that have an education in law but haven't been suckered into believing only one aspect of it and realizing that there's another. Okay. Anything else, Ed?
I had something else, but it's going out of this.
Go ahead.
It's gone. It floated right away.
Oh, out of your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called old timers. Yeah. I find it more frequently walking into a room going, why did I come in here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I walked into a store the other day, put my keys down on the counter, then I picked them up and put them into the wrong pocket and didn't know it. I finally found them, but I said to someone, I'm going to get to the point where I'm not allowed to come out and play here anymore.
There you go. All right. Anyone else? Press keypad. Press star 2. Going once. Let's check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking about pressing star 2. Well, Brent came back and followed by Michael from Lost Wages. Go ahead, Brent. Whoop.
Yeah, regarding the law firms that do that kind of thing, this contact that I recently got, I mentioned Klein, something about a law firm, Klein. Now, there's probably a ton of law firms out there named Klein, so I'll have to get the details on that. But they apparently are doing this American National and whole legal process with the ROE and everything else. Yeah.
You have members of a state bar processing this?
I'm not sure if they're members of the bar or not. I know that they're a law legal firm, law firm of some sort.
Well, if you ever find their contact information, I implore you to send it to me. I'd have to talk to them.
Yeah, I'll give it to you later tonight, probably.
Yeah, send it to me, text me, whatever. Anything else, Brent?
No, that was it.
Thank you so much. That's something I'd like very much to know about. Mr. Michael in Lost Wages, go ahead, buddy.
Yes, can you hear me?
No.
Hello?
We can.
No, I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
No, I can't hear you.
Well, the W-8 bin, if they won't accept the W-8 bin in the code, in their code, it says in their law that they're bound to accept these. And I just had a discussion with a man today about it, and he was reading it off, that they have to accept it. Otherwise, they're accepting a liability in the And then the other thing is the no tag, no license, and all of that stuff. Just have a tag made up with UCC-1-308, because in their UCC code, it says where the code comes into conflict with the common law, it has to defer to the common law. They don't have any way around that.
I've got 2 points on that. Very important. When you put a tag on your car that says UCC 308, you are identifying their statute, their law. You're identifying their law. It's a universal law. And that's the last thing that I would want to do personally. And then the second thing was the common law. If you go to the first volume of Westlaw's statutes for any state in the union, the very first volume in the preface, where it says this state recognizes admiralty law, bankruptcy law, chancery law, common law, asterisk, ecclesiastical law. And when you go to the asterisk and you find where it finally makes its comment, it says, except where otherwise noted, the common law has been incorporated into this state statutes. End quote. Meaning they hijacked the phrase common law, and they're utilizing it within the statutes, which is a different jurisdiction than the American common law under the Union. Just because you have a word or phrase that has a definition you're familiar with, that same word or phrase may have two or three or more definitions. Just go to a Black's Law Dictionary and look up the word trust. T-R-U-S-T. I mean, it's got 3 or 4 pages devoted to different types of definitions under trust. So just as United States has 3 definitions, I'd be very careful about anything that they talk about verbally or in writing regarding the common law with that understanding. Back to you, Michael.
Well, anything we do, you have to utilize all of the vocabulary that Mrs. Dempsey taught in the fifth grade, because the definitions of the words is what you have to fish out of them. They don't want to define what they're talking about, and they don't want
to
define.
And you need to.
Yeah. And it's just like go ahead.
If you have to reference, say, the UCC, you need to say your UCC, your statute number, Florida statute XYZ123, because it's theirs. It does not belong to you.
Right. They've hijacked the states with a zip code. That's a federal zone.
Correct. Fuck that.
Everything they do is detrimental to us.
I know. Well, it's the most profitable corporation in the world.
Well, that's the thing. People don't understand it's a corporation. When they go into a court, they're not going into a court of law. They're going into a court of a corporation. I don't know. I don't get what some of these people just can't comprehend about it, Mike. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. But when I talk to them tomorrow, I'll get that code because it's in the IRS code or the Internal Revenue because they're two different.
That would be
codes.
Wonderful. I'll share that with everybody.
All right. I'll try to get it tomorrow.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. GW, any closing remarks for us tonight?
Been a good call and lively conversation, and everybody stay well.
All right, thank you. I want to remind everyone to join us tomorrow night, Tuesday, with John. John is the chief of point of the spear for litigation. He is absolutely the go-to guy for anything that may be coming at you down the road. And, of course, Wednesday night is the LLC for Mr. Slevin that does not have a tax responsibility associated with it. If you're doing anything commercial or if you are currently an employee and would like to take benefit to operating through the LLC as a worker instead of an employee for your present employer. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound. The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.